For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. I am very pleased to be joined by the 83rd Treasurer of the state of Connecticut, Mr. Sean Wooden, in the wake of the police killing of George Floyd in Minnesota. As a black man, I felt anger, but I've also felt hope that for the first time there might be a real chance of making some real substantive changes in this country. How well does that describe how you feel?
I am absolutely in the hopeful category. The 8 minutes and 46 seconds of watching George Floyd being killed in front of our very own eyes has galvanized many Americans, and I call it our modern day Emmett Till moment in America, where many Americans can see the horror and the tragedy that is racism, that is police brutality, and want to do something about it. I think it's different this time. And as both a father of two black boys, as a elected official, I want to lean into this moment and to take this opportunity to move our country to a better place.
I saw your passionate editorial in The Current a couple of weeks back, imploring corporations to use their influence to lead the way in making society more equitable for people of color. And your office last fall spearheaded an effort known as the Northeast Investors Diversity Initiative. In a nutshell, what is it? And in a world where 37% of S&P 500 companies have no black people at all on their boards, is the initiative showing any signs of working?
With respect to corporate America, there is not enough diversity from the senior leadership levels, boards and CEOs and C-suites and throughout the organization. So this is an effort that I'm leading along with a number of other investors representing close to $300 billion in capital to encourage and assist in that diversity effort. And it is starting to bear some fruit. I've got a front row seat to Wall Street, to the power and influence that corporate America has. And my call to action is to say, use that power and influence in a constructive way that will help our country, and it will also help your corporations. And there's, as I wrote about, there's precedent for this when you look at helping to end the brutal racist regime of apartheid in South Africa and how corporate America, through economic sanctions, weighed in North Carolina with the bathroom bill and bringing that to an end. So that's the call. And I sent the op-ed to over 400 corporate leaders. And the response and the conversations I've had as a result of it leave me very encouraged that there is an interest and there is a will. And I am trying to build what I call the coalition of the willing amongst corporate America to address this on a systemic and sustained basis. But it won't be a coalition of the perfect, because we all have a lot of work to do.
Well, here's the hard comeback to what you just said. Is that we all know that, you know, these corporations pay a lot of money for public relations staffs and public relations firms. They have a way of putting their finger to the wind and figuring out what the zeitgeist of the country is and then acting accordingly for as long as they have to. Now, why is this moment different?
Sure. So this moment is different. There's something about that 8 minutes and 46 seconds of George Floyd's murder, with him gasping and saying, "I can't breathe," with him calling for his mother, with the cops being told that blood is coming out of his nose, with screams for check his pulse. There is something different about that footage from, and there's been lots of video that has been very disheartening, but something different. And you look at the protests and you see the demographic of the protests, and the diversity and the number of whites, quite frankly, engaged in the protest effort. When you see the reaction, and so, yes, I believe corporations, and I've had these conversations privately with CEOs, and I've said it publicly, you know, this has to be more than just your fancy PR shops putting out the right messaging to help protect or enhance your branding in a moment of a tragedy in our country. And being on the right side of this. And so, what I'm getting back from sincere corporate leaders saying we're real. We want to do something about this, and just getting down to a deeper level of how to, what next, what can we do? And so that's why I think public opinion, or I know public opinion on this, is changing. You know, I have tons of anecdotal experiences from these conversations, from what I'm seeing on TV. But recently we've had, you know, Gallup polls that show, you know, an overwhelming majority of Americans believe that we need police reform, right? That's very different than just a few years ago. We see other polls, credible polling, showing how America is shifting on this. And this is not just Black Americans, not just Republicans or Democrats. This transcends race, transcends party affiliation, and the data is showing that. And all of those lead me to be more hopeful than I have ever been, certainly in my lifetime. And can we do something with this moment? That is to be determined. Do I believe that this is the best opportunity that we have had and that we will likely have in my lifetime? I have no question about it that this is.
You know, there's been a lot of calls for police reform, obviously, in the wake of all this. And you probably caught the news that the city of Hartford voted to reallocate 6% of the police budget. You were a former Hartford City Council president. Knowing what you know about the process, about your interactions with the police during your time, how difficult a move do you think this was for the city, and what do you think the reaction to this action will be?
I believe at the municipal level, you always have hard choices with respect to allocation and budgets. I think the more significant discussion in City Hall in Hartford and at the state and local level across our state is about what can we do in reforms, eliminate and outlaw chokeholds. It should have been done some time ago. Let's go ahead and do it. Strengthening accountability in civilian review boards. We need to do that. Body cameras, you know, it's something I pushed for as city council president, and Hartford police, they wear body cameras now. That's part of it.
Be nice if they could keep them on too, by the way.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I see a change starting, but we have to get to systems, culture, and reforming that as well. And so the same thing that one might suspect, why wasn't that body camera on when it should have been, right? That gets to culture, and that gets to accountability, and that's where we need to be focused.
I talked about it with Senator Murphy the other day, and he and I are on the same page in as much as, to me, the issue in making things more equitable is changing zoning laws to allow more affordable housing to mix in with pricier housing, you know, so you can, for example, I live in that type of development in Farmington, where there are mansions across the street from more affordable townhomes. And it's really beautiful. It's pretty harmonious. And it allows for a much more diverse selection of kids to attend Farmington High. Now, the problem is that I don't get the impression that the type of community I live in would be welcome in, say, Darien. And if anybody's listening from Darien, I apologize in advance if I'm wrong. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. And you're absolutely correct. Right. These are what I call some of the structural barriers. And, you know, and I mentioned housing, education, economic disparities, healthcare, but zoning laws, they end up forcing a concentration of poverty, right? A lack of diversity. There are a number of things that flow from these restrictive zoning laws that, you know, in some respects are modern day redlining of communities. And I think, you know, we have to seriously look at that. And that's part of kind of going beyond the police reform, which is critically necessary and what I think we need to get done now. But we can't stop there when we talk about disparities we have to get to the issues like housing and zoning in order to address that. And, you know, and I will come back to like where I started on all of this, which is just the, you know, thinking about my kids, right? And I don't know if I had mentioned this to you, but I actually started and decided to write the op-ed that appeared in Hartford Courant after the video surfaced of Ahmaud Arbery. And at the dinner table, my son, who's a runner, asked me whether it was safe for him to continue jogging through the neighborhood. And that cut through the cord. It's the same son who's been with me being pulled over by the police for really no reason. And thinking about what kind of a country do I want my kids to grow up with in? And what can I do to contribute to making it be that country? And so I've never been on the sidelines, and I said there's no reason to be on the sidelines on this, but it's like I want my kids to be able to live wherever they want, irrespective of their socioeconomic status, irrespective of their race. I want them to have those options and opportunities. And that's where we need to move to, you know, as a state and as a nation.
He is Connecticut's treasurer, Sean Wooden. Thank you so much for the time.
All right. Thank you so much, John.